Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Our good friend Kenny Hawk Harrelson joining us on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Hawk.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
How are you feeling as far as this weekend goes? I know you're thrilled that the White Sox beat up on the Cubs yesterday and that you want to go out with three wins against the rival and the crosstown rival, and certainly all that, but from the perspective of soaking it all up over these last couple weeks and in this weekend, where are you at right now?
Well, it's not tomorrow. It'll hit me, and I know I'll be emotional tomorrow. The biggest thing right now and yesterday is obviously, as you said, is beating the Cubs. That would be just an unbelievable finish to my career if we could sweep those guys. But that, when you played that Burley thing right there, I still had tears in my eyes. That is my all-time favorite call right there, because of the fact, not so much of the perfect game, but because of who threw it.
Exactly.
I've called like 12 no-hitters and I think one other previous perfect game. So, you know, if it's a guy that is just, you know, a good guy, but not like a Burley, you just go up and pat him on the fanny after the game and say, nice going. But with Burley, it means so much because he's my all-time favorite White Sox player. And another thing is he reminds me so much of my favorite teammate, Miss Catfish Hunter. It's amazing how similar those guys are. Same size, one's right-handed, one's left-handed, perfect bookends. And neither one of them had what you call good stuff. The only thing they did was beat you. And when you get guys like that, it's something extra special. And I've just been blessed in my career to have been a teammate of Catfish, and then to have Mark Burley and call this perfect game, that says it all.
Inside the Clubhouse brought to you by Respect Burgers, all natural frozen Respect Burgers now available at your local Jewel Osco, and this hour brought to you by Grandview Homes. Grandview will buy your home today. Go to grandviewhomes.com. Hawk, to both Bruce and myself, you have been so generous with your time over all these years, and you've kept us amused, you know, with a lot of stories. So we appreciate your time not only this morning but over all these years, and we look forward to seeing you for a long, long time, both at the ballpark and hopefully even on the golf course one of these days. I want to talk a little bit not only about yesterday's game, and Ronaldo Lopez was really, really good, and he's been really good now for his last about half dozen outings. I think the future with the White Sox, like it is with all teams, and I think you would agree with this, is always going to be starting pitching. And this is where the positive is for the White Sox. I mean, Lopez, Carlos Rodon, Giolito, Michael Kopech, hopefully, you know, will come back as strong as ever a year down the road. And Dylan Cease, who a lot of scouts told both Bruce and myself, he might be the best of the bunch somewhere down the road. This is the positive for the White Sox and all their fans, I think, going forward. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a thoroughbred. There's no question about it. The first thing I look for, first of all, one of the reasons I have talked to you guys a lot over the years is because I love to talk baseball with people who know what they're talking about. If you guys didn't know what you're talking about, I wouldn't have given you all this time to tell you that right now. But, you know, the first thing I look for in a young pitcher is he afraid of the bat? And you can tell that. Yeah, if you watch him pitch a game or two, you can see if he's afraid of the bat or not. And it's amazing how many guys in the major leagues today are scared to death of that bat. They don't want to pitch to contact. They don't want to trust the defense. And the first thing you know is ball one, ball two, ball three or one, three and oh, whatever, and then ball four. So that's a good indication right there, guys, who are afraid of the bat. But Ronaldo, no, he just goes out there. He doesn't care who's holding the bat. Just get in the box and let's go. I'm coming right at you. Here it is. See what you can do with it.
Hawk,
you made a point right there about starting pitching. The game has changed to a degree because it used to be the starters, you know, they would go 7, 8, 9 innings a lot. And today that's just not going to happen. So they're going to go 5 or 6. Now, Ronaldo, seven innings yesterday, which is, you know, not too many guys go seven innings today. The ones that are really, that will do that are your studs, are your stars. But it's the bullpen today. That's the way the game has changed. It's evolved into, if you have starters that were going to pitch 200, 220 innings, and in my time it was 300 innings, then the bullpen, it was important, but not anywhere near to the degree it is today, because the bullpen is there. The starters are actually out there to protect the bullpen. And that's when Francona, that's why Terry has been so successful. I think he's got 14 consecutive seasons over 500.
Right.
And in today's game, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's Bobby Cox-like. Yeah.
It's just crazy. But, you know, when Bobby had those guys down in Atlanta, they were going 7, 8, 9 every time out.
You bet.
So the bullpen really didn't have that much to do. Today, you could see it coming about, Bruce, you and I talked about it, about 12, 15 years ago. You could see the change. You can see the evolution. And one of the reasons being because it's become an agent's game. And if you were an agent or I were an agent, we'd be doing exactly the same thing, trying to extend the shelf life of their clients. And with pitchers, they don't want them throwing 100 pitches anymore. You know, Mark Burley had 14 consecutive seasons. He's only one of 16 pitchers in Major League history. Of all the pitchers, thousands of them, there's only been 16 to go 14 consecutive years with 200-plus innings, double-digit wins. And of the 15 prior to Burley, 14 of them in the Hall of Fame. The only one that's not is Roger Clemens, and of course, he was a 7-time Cy Young Award winner. And he eventually will get into the Hall of Fame because he deserves it. But it's this, today is bullpens. That's the first thing. I mentioned it yesterday during the game. That's the first thing Kenny and Rick got to start doing right now, and they have the ammo to do it because they traded and they got some great arms, great young arms, and you have to build your own bullpen with guys that you trade for or guys that you draft. And what you want is strong arms out there. And, boy, they have a plethora of those guys down in the minor leagues, so they can develop those guys and train them right now to start being relievers, because if you don't have the bullpen, you're going to lose.
Back to your career, Hawk. My favorite time, and there's been a lot of them during your long and really illustrious career of broadcasting, was when you would take on umpires. You would take on Phil Garner, and Phil Garner would come back at you. That was as close to WWE, WWF, as far as in your face, old time, what baseball is all about as far as real rivalries go. Where did all that change? Did it change as baseball changed as far as that rivalry type stuff? Because I thought that was as good as you get when you have your top broadcaster in one team and the manager of the other going toe to toe.
Well, I can't stand Phil Garner. He's an asshole. But the thing about it is that I believe in retribution. If you hit one of our guys, I think you got to hit at least one, maybe two of theirs. That was the Drysdale theory. You hit one of mine, I'm going to get two of yours. That was Ned Farmer. Ed was one of the meanest guys in pitchers in baseball when he was out there. He didn't want to knock you down. He wanted to knock you out. And you get guys like that, that was the culture of that game. And one of the things that changed it, Brucey, is the fact of free agency. You didn't have anywhere near as much movement back in my time zone as you do today. And then the money. And then Major League Baseball, which is over-regulating the game in my opinion, they came in with these regulations. And then the fines and suspensions got to be to the point it was just too expensive. But it's just like when that guy hit AJ twice down in Texas.
Right.
You know, that I went down to their dressing room after the game. I was asked one of the guys, I said, would you go in there and his name Padilla, Vincente Padilla.
Right.
I said, go in there and tell Padilla I'd like to see him outside. So he goes in there, and he knew I was pissed. So he goes in there. He comes back about 3 or 4 minutes later. He says, he's not coming out. But that to me, warranted a fight. It's just that simple. And the guys today, that's the culture we grew up in.
Right.
And we used to plan sometimes. We used to plan before the game started. We did that several times with the Detroit, the Tigers, because we used to get in a fight with them every series. And, you know, it was like in 2000, what galvanized our club that year was the fight with Detroit. And from that point on, the players took care of everything else themselves. That galvanized the club. And you don't see that today. And I know there are a lot of parents out there that don't like what I'm saying right now, but that's the way baseball used to be. And I think it, as you mentioned, it's gotten away from it so much now that you're still going to have some scuffles, but it's just a different game today. And I understand it because I've been around it for almost 60 years.
All right. So closer to, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, I was standing outside the umpire's room and you had to come down and talk to Joe West. And you had talked to Jerry, you had talked to Commissioner Selig at that time. That was an interesting moment and, somewhat different moment in time because I never thought I'd have to see that happen because of the fact that you've always been a stand-up guy. You always, you know, did your part, but your respect for Jerry Reinsdorf and Bud exceeded what you wanted to do. And I thought it was interesting that you put that aside because of your respect for those two guys.
Well, you just framed it perfectly. My respect for Jerry and Bud superseded. And the irony of that story, too, is that I walked into the – Jerry was with me. I walked into the umpire's room, and Joe was standing about 15 feet in the middle over there. And I looked at him. I said, Joe, you want to end this right now, or you want to keep it going? So he looked at me for a couple of seconds and came over, stuck out his hand, we shook hands, and that was the end of it. And the next time I had a chance to meet him was
I thought you were going to take a throw a right at him.
Well, I told Joe, I didn't know that he had throat cancer. So we're in Texas, and Stoney says, you know, this is Joe West's first game back. I said, first game back from what? He said, well, he had throat cancer. So after the game was over, I went down there, and I knocked on the door. One of the umpires, a big guy, forget his name, came up, opened the door, and he looked like he was absolutely shocked that I would be standing there, you know. I said, where's Joe? He said, he's in the shower. So I walked back there, and Joe's in the shower. He's got soap on his face, and I said, Joe. So he rinsed the soap off. He looked at me. He said, Hawk, what are you doing? I said, Joe, let me tell you something. I said, I don't mind fighting you. I don't mind arguing with you. But the one thing I don't want you to do, I don't want you to get sick on me. So he started laughing. And that more or less, you know, galvanized our relationship. In fact, now we're good buddies. We play golf together. And Joe West overall has been, in his career, the best umpire I've ever seen. And he's the kind of guy you want behind the plate in the seventh game of the World Series. So but my two rules, as you well know, you've heard me say it many times, is first rule in baseball is you got to catch the ball. Next rule is don't mess with Joe West.
The one and only Hawk Harrelson, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse for a few more minutes. David, you got to read?
No, actually, I got a question of Hawk. I want to ask you, Hawk, about one player. He's opened my eyes. I'm sure he's opened up a lot of White Sox fans' eyes. He's got a home run every 14 at-bats, which is really good numbers. That's Daniel Polka, who's, you know, just... I don't want to say he's come out of nowhere, but he has surprised a lot of people. He reminds me a little bit of Dan Pasqua, but with more power. And I'm just wondering, you know, I think he's going to be your DH next season, certainly against right-handed pitchers. What are your thoughts on what you've seen from this kid this season?
Well, you're right. He did come out of nowhere. That's just what you call good scouting. For them to pick up Daniel because of the fact that I loved his first game I saw him, I loved his trigger. I loved his leg kick. And that's the way I think that coaches today and parents should try to teach their young aspiring players who have some talent, teach them a leg kick. If it doesn't work for them, then you can always go someplace else. But he's got a tremendous trigger, and he is so strong. He's not as strong as Pasqua, though, David. I'll say Pasqua, outside of Frank Howard, Pasqua is as strong as anybody ever played this game. He and Ron Kittle. But, no, he his left-hander is pretty good, too. It wouldn't surprise me if Daniel next year, look at what he's got now, but next year if he hits 40, 45 home runs, that would not surprise any of us at all because of the fact he's got that home run he has yesterday. I mean, you can't get the ball out of the park quicker than he got that one out of the park. That was like a David Winfield shot. And Bruce, you remember him.
Oh, yeah.
He could hit some of the hardest line drives you've ever seen in your career. But, no, we have a situation going forward for the White Sox. And I said it at Sox Fest this year, and I'm going to say it at Sox Fest next year. In my opinion, starting in 2020, I think that's got a chance to be the greatest decade of White Sox baseball in history, in their history. And I also think it's got a chance to be the greatest decade of baseball in Chicago baseball history, because the Cubs are good. They have terrific leadership. They're not going anywhere. And they're young. They have got a lot of young players. So it's going to be, to me, watching from up close some days and from afar other days, it's going to be fun for me to watch and watch these two clubs butt heads, because they're going to be two powerhouses. They're going to be two monsters.
The thing about Hawk Harrelson and Ken Harrelson, and you've explained it many times in books, and you have a great book out, by the way, that we're going to promote for you as well. But the difference between Ken and Hawk, you've explained it a lot of times. But I saw Ken Harrelson walk into the Cub clubhouse on Friday and go talk to his friend Joe Maddon. But Hawk Harrelson would never go into that clubhouse because he hates the Chicago Cubs. It's a beauty of loving the people in the game and still having your bias and your feelings of dislike for the Cubs. Explain your dislike for the Cubs.
Well, I just don't like them. It's just that simple. They're our rivals. And I didn't like teams that when I was playing, it's A.J. A.J. is the perfect poster child for what we're talking about. A.J. hated the team he was playing against that particular day. And that's the way I played the game. Mm-hmm. I wanted to beat their ass. I mean, it's just that simple. Now, after the game was over, if we went up against each other in the bar having a beer, that's a different story. That's Kenny. But Hawk played the games. I did not play those games. Hawk did. And as far as Joe Maddon goes, we got, in my opinion, two of the best managers in the game, and Rick Renteria and Joe Maddon. I mean, these guys are absolutely something special, both of them. And Joe, what he did down in Tampa Bay was amazing. And then he comes up here, and I remember his first year, Aris and I, my wife and I, are doing a spring training game at the Cubs' new spring training facility. As we're walking outfield, Cubs walking by, he said, "Hi, Hawk." I said, "Hi, Theo." I said, "Theo, you just made the best deal you made since you've been here." He said, "What's that?" I said, "Hiring Joe Maddon." He said, "In your opinion, what makes him such a good manager?" I said, "The eyes." I said, "You just watch how those kids play for him. They will get him 27 outs every day. And that's the mark of a good manager. The mark of a good manager is not wins and losses. The mark of a good manager is how hard does his team play for him. Do they bust their ass down the line? If they hit a two-hop or the shortstop, do they dog it down the line, or do they run hard?" Well, both teams, if you do that with Rick Renteria, you're not going to be in that game. And if you do it a few times, you're not going to be in a White Sox uniform. Now, the mark of a general manager is wins and losses, because he's the one that puts fannies in uniforms. And it's just like Bannister down in Texas, who just got relieved, and Buck in Baltimore, who just got relieved. They didn't have anything to play. I mean, that Texas pitching was atrocious.
Yeah.
And they traded their pitchers away. And most times what happens is they fire the wrong guy. That's what happens most of the time. Instead of the guy who puts the fannies in uniforms, if he doesn't put them in there, you can't do anything as a manager. The only thing you can do is play what you got, but make them play hard. And that's what Rick and Joe Maddon do.
Hawk, in closing with you, David and I certainly appreciate your time. And as David mentioned, our friendship supersedes just about everyone that I've met in the game. You're just a special guy, and professionally, personally, it's been a great joy, and I know it's going to continue on. But I've never asked you this question. Who's your favorite broadcaster of all time? Who's the guy that you would pay to listen to do a broadcast?
That's easy for me. Don Drysdale. Don Drysdale to me. Vin's good. And Vin's great, Scully. It's been great for, all the parts of eight decades. But the guy that I thought was the great baseball announcer that I ever heard was Don Drysdale. He knew pitching. He knew hitting. He knew the game. He knew base running. He knew the fundamentals. He knew all the things that you have to know to be a great announcer. And he had a great presence. And he had a great delivery. And you guys have heard me say many times during a game about a pitcher, he's got good mound presence, or a hitter, he's got a good plate presence. Broadcasters are the same way. They have, there's some good, really good broadcasters. I love Tom Hamilton in Cleveland. He's a future Hall of Famer.
Awesome, yeah.
Yeah, he's just terrific. But the guy that I just absolutely loved, and I worked with him for 5 years in the booth, and learned so much from him, just not talking about it, just listening to him. And he had the ability, he could absolutely undress somebody. Because a lot of times, he got hot at you. Man, I'll tell you what. But he could undress them and never mention their name. The way he formed and framed what he was going to say. So Don would be my all-time favorite. Ernie Harwell's good at Detroit.
Hawk, knock him dead the next couple days. We'll be listening, as we always do. Thanks for all the memories, and I know there's going to be more because Hawk Harrelson and Kenny Harrelson never give up, and they never stop finding good things to do, and I know you're going to find it.
Well, that's up to Hawk. He keeps his nose clean and doesn't get in too many fights. Kenny never wanted to fight. Hawk was the one who always wanted to fight.
He got you in a lot of fights, didn't he?
Oh, boy. He bailed me out, too. I mean, we got our butts beat some, but fortunately we won a lot more than we lost.
Hawk, a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time out. Enjoy the next couple days. We'll see you at the yard, okay?
Yep. See y'all there.
Thanks, right. Kenny.
Ken Hawk Harrelson, one of a kind. You'll never see a duplication. Just love him, hate him. Can't stop listening to him either way. And I know Cub fans hate him. Sox fans have adored Hawk through his career. And what a career it's been.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.